The teacher in the temple. Now, as was their custom, his parents regularly went their way, year by year, into Jerusalem during the feast of the Passover. So, when he came to be 12 years old, after their finishing going up, according to the custom of the feast, and upon finishing the days, during their process of returning, the boy Jesus continued to remain in Jerusalem. Yet inferring from custom for him to be within the group journeying together, they went a day's way and then began seeking him back among the relatives and acquaintances. Then upon not finding him, they returned into Jerusalem, continuing in searching again for him. Later, after 3 days, it happened that they found him within the temple courts, continuing in sitting within the midst of the teachers, constantly listening to them, as well as repeatedly making inquiries and putting questions to them. Now all the folks continuing to listen to and hear him began standing outside themselves in amazement and were repeatedly astonished at his understanding and discerning responses. And that was from Luke chapter 2, verses 41 to 47, from the Jonathan Mitchell translation. The image before us is delightful in its innocence. Of the young boy Jesus, 12 years of age, on the cusp of moving out of childhood and into manhood. The age of 12 was a time in the Jewish tradition when a young boy would be being prepared for his coming of age in his 13th year. In fact, Jesus had likely been instructed in the proceedings of the Passover on this visit to Jerusalem in preparation for his partaking of it fully in the following year. As part of a young boy's instruction, it was also customary for the teachers to sit with him and to teach him by encouraging him to ask questions and then responding to these, with his questions serving as a way of opening up a dialogue. However, we know that what happened next was unexpected, that the church elders were astonished at the wisdom in this young boy of 12 years and were left stunned and amazed. It is with delight that we look upon this image and see this boy in his love of the word and of learning its truths, and in a state of what seems like unconscious enlightenment, without self-awareness in it, as he offers his understanding and insights to his teachers. And so, the text and its imagery draws us in initially with a soft, sweet affection. But we can move in deeper by remembering that the word is a text about the life of our mind, of our thoughts and affections. That it is a text that is psycho-spiritual in its nature because it describes the experiences of the word unfolding in our awareness. We can remind ourselves that to think spiritually is to think above person, place, time and space, and to look to what these represent as spiritual states within our mind instead. Before us, we have the young boy, Jesus, who is the word made flesh. The word in our mind in this state is no longer an infant, but a boy. So it is an experience of the word that is becoming more self-aware, more conscious for us. This boy is 12 years of age, and 12 denoting all the goods and truths of the church indicates this state of the word is on the cusp of moving into the maturity of a more adult state, a state where it is ready to be in the fullness of its use. It is a state of the word in us in a transition or on the threshold of an entry. It's ready to be educated in the things of the church more deeply, to receive doctrine and instruction, and to take responsibility for them. This is further supported by the fact that it has ascended into Jerusalem, it being a city that is high above the surrounding landscape, and so a higher or more interior spiritual state. The word Jerusalem itself means dual peace shall be taught, and it signifies the church in respect to its teachings. So everything about this state points to the idea that it is a stage in which the understanding of the word in us is ready to be instructed, to bring it into its maturity, into its fullness of use. We see that Jesus has been separated from his father and mother, the father and mother representing the goods and truths that have raised and nourished the young state of the word, but at some point have to be separated from, so that the boy can become a man and find a wife and raise his own family. Spiritual life is a continual cycle of unions and separations as one church within us ends and another begins, or as one cycle of regeneration comes to a completion and another commences. At the ending of the cycle, the goods and truths that have served us to a certain point are seen to have elements of evil and falsity in them, and so that which is no longer identified to be of the Lord is sloughed off. That which remains is what acts as the impetus substance for the forming of the new man, the new church, the new human. And so, separations occur so that distinctions can be seen, and vice versa. And then we look to join with what remains, which of course can only be reunited with the Lord in a state of instruction in the Word. The original goods and truths of the church, the father and mother, notice that the word is missing. They can't find it in the lower states of mind, and so ascend again into Jerusalem. After a state of completion in this seeking, as is signified by the 3 days of searching for the boy Jesus, they find him in the temple, in the house of the Lord, because where else but can the word be found? And this state of the word in us has been drawn there to meet with the established men of the church, the established truths in us, so that it may be taught. Or has it? One of the recognized phenomena in logopraxis is that we start out with the text with the intent of reading and studying it, only to find that it is in fact the text that is reading and studying us. That it is a text that is teaching us, teaching the established truths of the church, challenging the truths that we claim are truths, inquiring and questioning them and asking us to validate them. We claim that they are true, but the text, the word, asks us how they are true in our life, how we know them to be true. It sits within the midst of the teachers, constantly listening to them, as well as repeatedly making inquiries and putting question to them. We can draw other parallels in this story to our experiences of the logopraxis process. We journey to Jerusalem in a state of willingness to be instructed as we read the set reading, identify spiritual principles, and form a task to work with over the week. We find that the work with our task is similar to the state of seeking that the mother and father are doing in this story, in that the goods and truths that have nourished us until now are in a state of seeking the truth of the word in its application to life. The effort to sit down and summarize our work into a submission also speaks to the state of this seeking, as we look to find the Lord in what we have worked with and in what we might share with others in the sphere of our logopraxis life group. And so we enter our life group as one might enter into the court of the temple, eager to exchange our knowledge and experiences of the word, eager to share them. Perhaps there is even a state in the sense of self that is eager to teach others. But instead, like the teachers in the temple, we find that we have been gathered to be questioned and to have the work we have done with our task in the word to be inquired of. In short, we find that our truths that we have brought, like these teachers, have been gathered around the word to be taught. To be taught by the innocent young boy states of the truth that are focused in the delight of the love of the Lord and that are present without self-attribution. But how does this young boy state of the word teach us? How does truth that the self takes no credit for teach us? How do the questions it asks us to consider teach us? There is a memorable relation in conjugal love about the sports of wisdom. In other translations, it's referred to as the contests of wisdom or the schools of wisdom. The description of this contest and the way it unfolds also offers us principles in how the Lord of the Word works to teach us in our midst. This memorable relation can be found in conjugal love between numbers 132 and 136, but the specific section of 132, which is about to be explored here, can be found at the end of this presentation. What we find described in the opening passages is a scene similar to Jesus arriving at the temple and to us arriving at our life group meeting. There is an ascent into a higher part of the land, a deliberate movement to looking to things of the Word, and a desire to gather with others to share in the love of wisdom. And reading now a section from Conjugal Love 132. I once had a talk with two angels, one from the eastern and one from the southern heaven. When they noticed that I was pondering the mysteries of wisdom on the subject of conjugal love, they said, "Don't you know anything about the contests of wisdom in our world?" "No, not yet," I replied. "There are many of them," they said, adding that those whose love of truth comes from a spiritual affection, that is to say, they love truths because they are true and because they are the way to wisdom, meet when the signal is given to discuss matters requiring profound understanding and to reach conclusions about them. Then they took me by the hand, saying, "Come with us and you will see and hear. The signal has been given for a meeting today." I was taken across a plain to a hill, and there at the foot of the hill was an avenue of palm trees extending all the way to the top. We went in and climbed the hill. And that was the Chadwick translation. A prepared document with a seal is then set on the table in the centre of the meeting. The document holds questions for the consideration for those who are present, in much the same way as the young boy Jesus sits in the middle of the teachers in the temple, asking them questions. And in much the same way as the Word raises questions for us about what we think we know when we read it or when we hear it read. No one challenges the origin or authority of the document, just as no one in the temple questions the validity of the Word. For anyone entering into the logopraxis approach, there is some form of acknowledgement that the text is divine, and we are reminded of this again when we gather in our life groups to meet and work with the Word as our central focus. This is a foundational premise in the work of logopraxis, and hence in one's ability to enter into it. It comes from an inner perception that is linked to our willingness to bring truths into life. This willingness allows for an inner witness, an inner perception that something is true. This is not to say that we are not allowed to question the authority of the text. This is a natural part of our development as we come to terms with the implications of the Word and the heavenly doctrines on our life. But to even just enter into this work, there is a recognition within ourselves that we are willing to submit to being taught and to have our sense of self reformed by the Word. Our trust in its authority is something that will continue to be both challenged and deepened eternally. In this way, there will always be a young boy sitting in the midst of the teachers in the temple, asking questions. The discussions in the contest of wisdom take place in three rounds. The first question begins with a reading from sacred scripture, and the men answer in the order with those from the north, west, south, and then east. Each group that speaks looks to what it can expand on and add to from what has been shared by the previous group. Finally, after each group has spoken, a conclusion is reached that incorporates the ideas offered from all four of the regions. How we listen is such an important factor in the creation of a sphere within which the Lord can be experienced. Just as each of the four regional groups spoke and built on what the previous group offered, we also are asked to cultivate this skill in our Logopraxis Life group. As each member's experience of the word working in their life is brought forth, the degree to which each practitioner is able to elevate their thoughts so that the Lord is recognized in what is shared is the degree to which the potential for a collective experience of recognizing the Lord as the word in our midst may be present. We therefore are asked to work to develop a sensitivity in hearing in what another shares of the text in relation to their life, with also what resonates with our own work or experience of the text, and then to share from that, seeking to draw positive connections. This form of dialogue contributes to the growth of wisdom because it forms our connections with one another on the basis of the good of life being the end in view. But being awake to another person when they are sharing, written or verbal, takes effort. As with reading the text itself, we are easily lulled into a waking sleep as our thoughts drift away from being awake to the Lord and the other person and fall instead into our sense of self or proprium. The proprium, when removed from the Lord as its overseer, believes that what it sees and thinks is true to the point where it will disregard and defend, sometimes aggressively, anything that disagrees with it. It quickly grabs hold of what it finds agreeable in another and is just as quick to attack that which is opposed to its own view, seeking to pull down what it finds objectionable, to bring the other into submission to, and therefore an image of, itself. What it believes to be a dialogue is really nothing more than a dressed-up monologue in which self-interest takes a leading role. It cannot and will not hear another, for it is too much in love with the sound of its own voice. It can often frame advice-giving as something good it is offering to another, when in fact it flows from a sense of thinking that it knows best, and is one of the many forms that pride in one's own intelligence can take. So whenever we see in ourselves a need to correct, chastise, and criticize what another shares in our life group, this is the young boy state of the word in us that is seeing and questioning and challenging the truths that are listening. It is the word that is seeing this need in ourself, and it asks us to stop and consider, to step back and observe our responses in the light of the truths of the word, and to practice this as consciously as we are able to. For it is the light of what truths teach that allows us to see what the proprium works to do when it is separated from the Lord. To be able to observe this hellish sense of self is how the word saves us, as it is in the seeing of it that allows us to be removed from our own engagement with it and its hold over us, and hence to also know more deeply the peace and freedom that is the Lord himself. The purpose of a Logopraxis life group is to create conditions in which the Lord's presence might be more fully experienced in what passes between group members when they share their accounts of the word working in their lives. Our work as Logo practitioners is therefore to seek to be awake to the Lord in each other, or more accurately, to be awake to his presence in the experiences shared of the word working in each other's lives. If we are to have any hope of the Lord becoming visible for us in this way, then we must seek to practice in the work of genuine participation with conscious listening and reading of the spiritual states that are being presented to us in our mind and making distinctions between those that are of the Lord and those that are not. Essentially, being able to hear and read the questions that the word is asking us and to step away from or outside of our sense of self or proprium is a spiritual literacy skill we must cultivate if we wish to see the Lord as the word in our midst. If we can practice this type of conscious listening and attending to the Lord in our Loka Praxis life groups, then we will find, like those in the contests of wisdom found, that the variety and diversity of the many forms of His life that are offered as each member shares may be gathered together into an even richer and deeper experience of the Lord for all. When we are open to the experience of being shown the self, then just as for those listening to the young boy Jesus, the wisdom that is the Lord will shine through into our understanding, bringing amazement and astonishment. Now all the folks continuing to listen to and hear him began standing outside themselves in amazement and were repeatedly astonished at his understanding and discerning responses.